we've got a fantastic show for you, haven't we, Kitty?
We have.
Yeah, but and it starts right here with our extra special guest,
yes,
Hilary Davan Wetton. Did I get that right?
That's very near.
Close enough. Yeah. Right, I've got a slightly long introduction for you, Hilary. Hilary is one of the country's leading conductors, in my humble opinion. He's the musical director of the City of London Choir. He's the artistic director of Leicester Philharmonic Choir and associate conductor of the London Mozart Players. He's also conductor emeritus of the Milton Keynes City Orchestra, of which he was the founder, conductor, and of the Guildford Choral Society. And he appears frequently as a guest conductor with choirs and orchestras in Britain and overseas, and performs regularly on Radio 3. And what's more, he has, it says here, a regular commitment, a real commitment even, to young people, both through work with youth orchestras and audience building. And he's right here with us on the Isle of Wight, in this studio with us, Kitty.
Welcome.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Okay, well, thanks for coming in, Hilary. So my first question, we're going to talk about what here in a minute, because you've got two amazing concerts, choral concerts, to conduct here on the island. But my opening question was, the thing that fascinates me is the difference between conducting an orchestra, because we've all got that image in our mind of the orchestra conductor, and then having to conduct people who sing, like conducting a choir. First question then, what's the difference between the two? Is there indeed a difference?
Oh yes, there is a difference. Of course, one of the things which is particularly interesting is that in this country, though there are professional choirs, obviously, you know, the 16 and the King's Singers and so forth, they're rather more rarefied beasts. And most of the choirs one conducts are amateurs. These are people who sing because they love singing. So you have to make them feel that what they're doing is intrinsically worthwhile. Otherwise, why are they going to give up their spare time to do it? And you've got to give them the highest possible aspirations so they can do it as well as they possibly can. And I would say it's an absolute truth that every person is more musical than they believe. There are a very small number of people who have it the wrong way around, but most people have it in the way that they feel that they, you know, their limit is sort of 80 of what they can actually achieve out of 100, and you just have to make them want to get to 100 and realize that they can, because of course it's very exciting when they know they've got to the very best they can do. And it's thrilling for an audience, because I mean, I've just made this recording with the Military Wives Choirs called Remember, which came out a couple of weeks ago, and I commend it to your listeners. It's a lovely record of music for the First World War. Okay. Now, these people are non-auditioned. The Military Wives Choirs are not auditioned. They join because they want to sing. For them, it really matters, because a lot of their men are in harm's way, or sometimes they're always moving around the place, because that's what the tree have to do. And so this fantastic organization is developed for mutual support. And the result you can hear in the singing, what's so interesting, is the fact that they have this mutual support and they really care about what they're doing, actually changes the sound they make.
Okay.
And that's an extraordinary thing. It's absolutely amazing. Whereas, you know, a professional orchestra, very talented, very dedicated people, but they're doing this 40 hours a week. And for them, you've got to make sure you don't waste their time. What they don't want to have is time wasted. So you just have to use the time very efficiently, make clear what you want, and they will give it to you in the concert. If you've got any sense, you don't ask for it in the rehearsal. My great teacher, Sir Adrian Bolt, you know, said to me, you don't want to have two concerts in one day. And he was quite right. And they don't want to wind themselves up to 100% in a rehearsal, then to do it all over again in the evening. You can't do that 6 days a week. Okay. You get exhausted.
Is it reasonable to compare you to somebody like the director of a play, in that you have the words in front of you, the playwright has written, and you've got a stage and an audience, and you are the interpreter of those words, and you bring it to life? Is that what you do with the music that's in front of you?
I think that is certainly very similar. I mean, the slight difference is, and I've thought about this quite a lot, Fran, I mean, it's an interesting question. The director does his work in rehearsal, but actually when it's happening on the moment of performance, he can't do anything. If someone cocks it up, that's just love. You know? Yeah. But when you're conducting, you have to be thinking slightly in front. In a performance, you think slightly in front of what's happening, so you can be helpful to people when there are tricky moments to get round.
Okay.
In a rehearsal, you're not thinking in front in that way. You're listening to what you're hearing with a view to putting things right that may not be quite as you want them to be.
Okay.
But in the performance, you're just looking a little bit further forward, and you're just trying to make sure you know where the tricky moments are going to be so you can get people past them.
Okay.
So you do have slightly more responsibility at the moment of performance than a director does.
Okay. How did you personally become a conductor? See, that's another thing that fascinates me. I can understand, oh, I want to play the violin, I love classical music, I'm going to play an instrument. How do you decide, or what pathway do you follow to become a conductor?
Well, that's a fascinating question. And I was 17 years old. I was at the Royal College of Music, and I'd been studying the organ. I was a pupil of the great George Thalben Ball, a famous organist for many of your older listeners. And I thought to myself, well, I want to be an organist. You know, I needed to direct choirs as part of that job, and I better learn how to do this. And it so happened that the college had had its conducting class in abeyance. It had sort of stopped for 3 or 4 years. Don't quite know why. And they were restarting it in September of my second year. And I went to see the director and said, should I do this? Oh, yes, you'd love it, you know. So I did it. It was orchestral course. It wasn't a choral course, actually. And the first time I picked up a stick, it was the symphony by César Franck. I knew absolutely nothing about the piece. I think I'd given it 20 minutes preparation. I'd totally underestimated the amount of work you need to do before you start. But nonetheless, the moment I had a stick in my hand, I thought, this is rather fun, you know, and that was really it, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was pretty awful at it in those days. I'm hopefully slightly less so now. But I think there are people who, it's a fix. It's a drug is the wrong word for it, but you know, you like doing it or you don't. And
yeah.
I think if you do, your liking of it becomes very intensive very quickly.
And one of the big things for you is making classical music, bringing classical music to a wider audience, making it accessible. Because I think we were chatting earlier, and you were saying that a lot of people sort of switch off to it because they feel it's inaccessible.
Oh, and particularly in this country, we seem to got this wholly wrong. You know, we make it sound as though classical music is something you have to have an enormous amount of knowledge to enjoy. You've got to be touched by the music fairy in some mystical way. It's all absolute rubbish. All you need to do to enjoy classical music is to listen to it. Now, that's perhaps the key phrase, because obviously you'd have it on in the background in the kitchen. However much you enjoy listening to it, you won't necessarily really get it, because you do need to focus. And one of the differences, in my view, between conventional popular music, obviously that's not universally true, but most of it is that it's meant to be listened to while you're doing something else.
Yeah.
Whereas classical music really requires you to focus in a bit. But there's this very interesting, I think you know, I had a program for 4 years on Classic FM called Masterclass, where we took a piece to pieces. You had an orchestra in the studio. I took it, dismantled the piece, and then played the whole thing at the end. And, you know, we had over 2 million people listening, which was very, very interesting. And I think that the key point is that Classic FM did this research. If someone goes to a concert, a classical concert, for the first time, they're no more likely to go again than if they'd never been at all, which is rather a daunting thought in a way. If they go twice, they are 10% more likely to go for a third. If they go 3 times, they are 70% more likely to go to become regular concert goers. So I urge everyone listening, if they don't think they like classical music, go not to one concert, but to 3 concerts.
Okay.
And then if you don't like it, fine, do motor racing. But most people will actually find that they begin to get it.
Yeah.
And once you've got the language, it will get to parts that, as in your famous advertisement, other things can't reach. That's what music does. It changes people's lives.
Yeah. And you can see it in your eyes as you talk. You're still passionate about it yourself,
of course,
aren't
I am.
You?
Yes, yes. I mean, extraordinarily lucky. I do something I really love doing on a daily basis. How many people have that fortune?
I know. And do you still play the organ?
I do. Yes, so certainly I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only just given up. I had a church in Oxford, which I used to play in until last Easter. And no, I played quite a lot, actually. And there's some very good organs on the Isle of Wight, actually.
I mean,
the organ in Ryde, where we are tonight, is a very fine instrument. And we're in Totland on Saturday, and that's another fine instrument. And
excellent.
I came to the Isle of Wight as an adolescent, you know, and I used to define my summer holiday by how many organs I played.
Yeah. And speaking of that, is that a nice link to you and Joe Brand?
Well, it's perfectly. Joe Brand, of course, is a fascinating person at a whole variety of levels, and I had the most wonderful time when I was teaching her the organ. There was this rather lovely series on BBC One called Play It Again, and it was designed for celebs, not terribly keen on that term, doing something they'd always wanted to do in the way of a musical instrument but never had the chance for various reasons. And she had played the piano, I think, rather well, probably, till she was about 40, and then gave it up to annoy her mother, which I think she did very successfully. And then she decided, when she was invited to take part in this programme, that she wanted to learn the organ. And I was advising the BBC on who should teach these various people various things. You know, I mean, there were various well-known people doing things. And I said, well, I think the person who should teach Joe Brand is probably me. And very sweetly they agreed to that. And we got on extraordinarily well. But she is a very good example of this because, you know, she would, I think, not have defined herself as a classical musician at all. But after 6 months of working jolly hard, which, of course, she did, and that's one of the things about these very talented people, the ones who are really good at their jobs, work very hard. And she practiced, and she played a performance of the Toccata in D minor by Bach in the Albert Hall after 6 months. I very slightly rewrote it to make it a bit more accessible, but she fundamentally played the piece, and she played it with great panache. And, you know, I think it is fair to say that she had not really thought of Bach as being her number one enthusiasm, and it has become so. And we're still in touch, and she still comes to us on my concerts, God bless her.
Fantastic.
And, I mean, that could happen to anybody. Anyone listening could actually go down that path if they just were motivated to try.
Okay. Kitty, we need to mention the two events.
We do, yes.
Can you... give us the details.
Yes, the first event is tonight in All Saints in Ryde at 7 p.m. and tomorrow at Christchurch in Totland again at 7.
Yeah, and that's the City of London Choir in both cases?
Yes and no. Okay. Tonight is very special because the island's own chamber choir, the Camerata, which is a first-class choir, I was here last year, and they very sweetly invited me to take a workshop for them, and we got on well. And I thought, wouldn't it be lovely to, you know, to have a visiting choir combine with the island's chamber choir? And unlike many of my fantasies, it actually came true. And here we are. And so they are joining us to sing this wonderful piece by Durufle. It's a requiem. Many people will know the Fauré Requiem. The Durufle is written very similar time, just a fraction later. It's a similar style, but actually I think almost better. It's less well known. It's just an accidental matter, this. Okay. But it's a fabulous piece. It's very accessible. And before it, we sing two big psalms by Elgar, which are great pieces, you know, massive English music at its best. And it's going to be a very exciting project. And we rehearsed together last night. It went terribly well. And we're rehearsing again all afternoon. And this evening, hopefully, anyone who can actually find the energy to come at 7 will have a pretty exciting time.
Fantastic.
Now, tomorrow it is the City of London Choir alone. We are going on our own tomorrow at Totland, and we're singing here four coronation anthems by Handel, which include Zadok the Priest, which, of course, is relatively familiar. And then we're singing some lovely Baroque music by people like Bach and Gabrielli, who is a Venetian composer of the early 17th century. And in the second half, we have more music by Elgar and Stanford and Holst, which, you know, so we have a sort of Baroque half and a 20th century half.
Okay.
And round them are these four great coronation anthems, which are staggering pieces by Handel.
Well, that sounds excellent.
Yeah, sounds amazing. We've got to move on, but before we go, I was going to ask you to introduce our next track on Vectis Radio. Would you be prepared to be our DJ and introduce the next song?
Yeah, well, this is a very, very interesting track, actually. Obviously, I wanted your listeners to hear the choir, so they didn't think this was all rubbish, you know, and the choir really is going to be always like a comb and piece of paper. This is a piece by Beethoven, you know, not perhaps the least known composer in the history of music. And this piece is a completely unknown piece. It's called the Glorreicher Augenblick, which means the glorious moment. It was written for the Treaty of Vienna in 1814, which was meant to end the Continental War, though I think Napoleon had a few other ideas. And it's a sort of thanksgiving for peace. And obviously, they know this really mattered. A lot of, you know, many hundreds of thousands of people had died in those wars, so they were pretty keen to get them out of the way and stop it. And Beethoven just loved that concept. And this is the final chorus from the glorious moment, and he throws the whole kitchen sink in. It's got big orchestra with percussion, it has the CLC singing, and also a boys' choir. This is the Westminster Boys' Choir on top. Oh, wow. So if your listeners hear some young voices, I'm afraid that's not the CLC, that's these wonderful 11 and 12-year-old boys from Westminster. But it's a fantastic piece, and I think you'll love it. It's very upbeat and hugely happy. And happy is good.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute joy to meet you and to talk to you and to share your love of classical music. And we hope some people listening have picked that up
as
well.
Absolutely.
You're
and
a big
come
fan.
Come at 7. That's the great
thing. You come at 7 tonight at All Saints and tomorrow at Christchurch, Scotland.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Kitty. So let's play it, shall we?
Oh, yes, please.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Thanks
Thank you
much.
Again, Hilary.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.